I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, voters nationwide chose more government, more spending, and less freedom. Plus, Seattle's mayoral race is still undecided, but be prepared for a late shift toward the socialist. And yet another government program is heading toward insolvency, and of course, you will pay the price. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by going to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and a big thank you to all of those who've signed up to support our show over the last 4 years as we celebrate our four-year anniversary of Undivided. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, again, as soul-sucking as it often is after elections like the one we just had. Now, let me say off the top, I am not a big believer that the election that we had yesterday in an off year is some sort of major indictment of the direction of the country or the Republican Party or President Donald Trump. I think it was a good night for Democrats. But a lot of the races we're going to discuss, I mean, these are traditionally blue states. It would have been a surprise if there were some sort of upset in these races. So I wouldn't be so doom and gloom, the world is ending. Now, that being said, it is always concerning to me when we have voters in this country who choose the path in the United States of America of less freedom. And I always think that that's a better way to characterize the political divisions that we have in this country. It's not red, blue, it's not right, left, it's not Democrat and Republican. It's people who believe that the government is the solution to their problems and the people who don't. The people who understand that the government is not the means by which their life is going to improve. And I think that's one of the scariest things that came out of the election results last night. And I'm not just talking about New York City, but I think that, you know, certainly reflects what I'm talking about. I mean, Zohran Mamdani, the socialist who is now going to be the mayor of New York City, said something that I actually am surprised to hear anyone say out loud, but it is in keeping with the theme, really, of today's show.
We will prove that there is no problem too large for government to solve and no concern too small for it to care about.
Wow. No problem too large for government to solve. No concern too small for the government to care about. I'm sure a lot of you hear something like that and you cringe, as do I. And I mean, it's really no surprise that this is what he believes, because his campaign was built off of promising people free stuff. You know, this is someone who believes in seizing the means of production. This is someone who believes in abolishing private property. This is someone who believes that you shouldn't be able to own anything, you shouldn't be able to have success, and everything that you have earned or everything that you have created should be shared with everyone else, regardless of what contributions that they've made to society. And the truth is, like, as nice as free things sound, every time you take something free, every time you take something from the taxpayers or you expect the government to give something, you're always giving something in return. And what is that? You're giving a little piece of your freedom, a little piece of your liberty and dignity away. That's the exchange. So even for people who might be down on their luck, truly need a handout and an assistance from the government, people who might need rent control, people who might need a government-run grocery store to be able to get by, you still are making an exchange for that. And the more and more dependent you are and reliant you are on the government, the less and less reliant you are on yourself, and therefore the less freedom you have. And I think it always just has surprised me that there are people who are so willing to give their freedom away for convenience. I mean, what should be one of the most prized possessions we have as not only Americans, but human beings on this planet and in this universe, our freedom and our autonomy, and we are so willing to hand it over for the sake of convenience. And that's really what voters in New York City said when they gave Mamdani 50%, just over 50% of the vote in yesterday's election. And I will say, I mean, it would have been a closer race, certainly, had Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, dropped out. And I think there's still some votes being counted. But even combined, I don't think that they would have been able to beat the Socialist. And that's a very concerning place to be. And one of the other things I noticed, other political pundits and talking heads noticed, is, you know, Mamdani ran this race where he basically created a version of himself that he thought would be palatable to voters, a version of socialism that he thought would be palatable. And he went out and he put on a nice suit and he had this big smile and he was very, you know, relatable and likable and nice. Well, then he won. And then he got up on stage last night and his speech was angry and, dare I say, vengeful. And it's like he's going to, now that he's won, carry out revenge on, you know, the people who he thinks have harmed him and others.
Hold bad landlords to account, because the Donald Trumps of our city have grown far too comfortable taking advantage of their tenants. We will put an end to the culture of corruption that has allowed billionaires like Trump to evade taxation and exploit tax breaks.
Ah, yeah, same old theme. Big bad landlords, big bad billionaires, except the billionaires that support you, right? Right, Mamdani? Like Alex Soros, who posted last night, "So proud to be a New Yorker. The American dream continues. Congrats, Mayor Zohan." So that billionaire is fine. The billionaires who support you and your campaign are fine. But the other billionaires, bad news. So Mamdani also, and this is a clip that's getting a lot of attention, but I think it speaks to his mindset and also this shift that we're seeing in cities like New York and elsewhere across the country. He had this like long list of, first of all, it was just word soup of identity politics, which I was hoping that we were getting out of the period of caring about identity politics, but apparently not.
Thank you to those so often forgotten by the politics of our city who made this movement their own. I speak of Yemeni bodega owners and Mexican abuelas, Senegalese taxi drivers and Uzbek nurses, Trinidadian line cooks and Ethiopian aunties.
And if you're just a regular old white New Yorker, well, screw you. If you're just a regular old born and bred American, well, screw you. And I'm certainly not one of these people who think that immigrants don't contribute to our country. You know, I think there's a growing sentiment among a segment of the right that, you know, we're you know, changing the landscape of America, so to speak. And we're letting too many people in from other countries. And, you know, our country is not going to continue to be what it has been. And I'm not necessarily scared of that per se. I believe there are people who come here from other countries who do contribute. I mean, look at Elon Musk. You know, he's not from here. And look what he's done for our country. I mean, there's a lot of examples of people who've immigrated here and contributed greatly to our country. So I definitely don't believe that. But when you have someone like Mamdani, you know, foreign born, has a lot of sympathies for interests outside the United States, as opposed to, you know, people who were born here and feel like they've been forgotten, I think that is a concerning thing. You know, and you hear him list off all those other nationalities, and New York has always been a melting pot. But I almost, you know, this is sort of what made Donald Trump so popular to begin with, is Donald Trump talked about the forgotten American. And I mean, I feel like now we're getting into another era where the forgotten Americans who felt seen and feel seen under President Donald Trump are going to be forgotten all over again. So the Socialist won in New York City. Not a surprise. I think we all knew that's where it was heading. In Seattle, I'm not sure yet. I'll be honest. I have a word of caution about the race here. I'll be honest. I'm kind of surprised about the results after the first drop last night. So Mayor Bruce Harrell, who's the incumbent, who is the more reasonable Democrat. I just hate to call him a moderate anymore because I really just don't think he'll blow whatever the way the wind blows. But he's got 54% of the vote. And Katie Wilson, the socialist, Minnie Mamdani, as we call her, the little Nepo baby who just came here in a car one day and said, "Oh, Seattle looks nice. I think I'll stay and start a transit blog and then run for mayor and get money from mommy and daddy, despite the fact my husband doesn't have a job. She has 46% of the vote. Now, you might be looking at that and think, man, that's pretty good. I think Mayor Bruce Harrell has it. Not so fast. So in the city of Seattle, what we know, late ballot returns heavily favor progressives and socialists. Remember, not too long ago, former socialist Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawant came back from a double-digit deficit on election night, and she came back to win. Now, she was running in one district of the city. This is obviously a citywide race, so it's a little bit different there. Shama Sawant was representing the most left-leaning district in the city, so certainly more like socialist there to vote. But I don't think Bruce Harrell would feel safe with this lead. I don't feel safe with this lead. I don't feel great about it. I don't have a good feeling about it. So we'll have to revisit this. The next ballot drop will be at 4 p.m. And we'll have to see how much it will absolutely close. That gap is absolutely going to close. I mean, it's quite a bit, but Shama Sawant closed a gap that was that significant. So we'll be watching that. So that happened, the socialist thing aside. You don't have to be a socialist. You don't have to be voting for a socialist to be voting to give your freedoms away. You don't have to be voting for a socialist to be voting for more government, more spending. The mainstream Democratic Party is for more government, bigger government, more spending, more taxes. And that's what we're seeing in Washington State. And unfortunately, people just haven't learned that lesson. And they're choosing between D and R when they should be choosing between big government or small government. More taxes or less taxes, but they just, I think, cannot get over the D and the R. And so those two really important Senate races we've been talking about for months and months and months, the Democrats are going to keep their seats. It just boggles the mind that people don't see, or maybe they're just not watching the news. Maybe they just, again, I think it just goes into circling the box for a D. And so in the 26th legislative district for state Senate, Deb Krishnadanson has a comfortable lead. I don't see that changing in late ballot returns. And so she is going to keep that seat over Republican Michelle Caldier. Same situation in the 5th legislative district. We really needed that seat to flip to avoid supermajority situations. Victoria Hunt, the Democrat, 55%. Chad Magandans, 45%. So she wins that race in the 5th legislative district. That was a huge opportunity for Republicans. Now, who do I blame there? I mean, there was a lot of vicious, nasty PAC spending. We talked about some of it on this show. The dishonesty that PACs are allowed to engage in is unbelievable. Who holds them accountable for that? I mean, they can spin. They were painting these candidates both as mega extremists and as rhinos and sending different mailers to different voters to try to influence them in different ways. Ultimately, it's up to voters in the media. The media is supposed to help voters make sense of these things. It's supposed to cover the dishonesty that's coming out of political ads and campaigns. It doesn't do it. The media is like decimated. So unless you're watching Undivided, you probably wouldn't know about those mailers. And you might have got one in the mail and thought, wow, mega extremist. I'm not going to vote for them. So I think that's part of it. But ultimately, this really all does boil down to the media. I just don't I really believe that if the media covered all these races honestly, covered the issues that were happening in the state of Washington honestly, covered the dangers of one party rule, that people would vote different. And so I keep coming back to the media, but it really is supposed to be the thing that keeps the electorate informed. And it's not. It's just a wing of the Democratic Party. So those two results, incredibly disappointing. We'll get to one more. We're going to get to some good stuff, I promise. It won't be all disappointing today. One race that I want to touch on that I do believe could shift. So I'm not ready to call this race, but it's the race for King County Executive. If you're not familiar, that's the county that Seattle is in. Girmay Zahalai is narrowly beating Claudia Balducci. They're both Democrats, but Girmay Zahalai certainly has supported more extreme policies. I wouldn't call him a socialist per se, but, you know, he supported dismantling police and all of that. So and is he would it be an improvement off Dow Constantine? I don't know. Dow's about as slimy as a politician as you can get. I like Girmay as a person. I've talked to him many times. I think he'd come on the show. He has come on the show. So I don't necessarily think as a person it's a worse swap. I think that would be an upgrade from Dow Constantine. But I'm very worried that in the height of 2020, Girmay Zahalai is like, yeah, screw the police, basically. I think anyone who supported that position is a loose cannon. It is just totally unpredictable because that is a totally unhinged position to take. So I'm very worried about that, but I don't think the fat lady has sung quite yet. All right, should we talk about some good things? Let's do it. Let's talk about some positive things. So Kevin Schilling, the Democrat who's trying to unseat a further to the left Democrat in the state house in the 33rd district, Kevin joined us on the show yesterday. He is leading 50% to about 47%. Will that hold? I think yes. I'm going to be positive. I think it will. The higher my voice gets, the more bullshit you can tell I'm spewing. But it's hard because, again, these late ballot returns tend to favor the further to the left candidate, which would be Edwin Obras. But we really need Kevin in. He's a Democrat. But at the end of the day, I trust him to be pro-public safety, pro-police. He opposes an income tax. I think that he's going to be able to act as a more independent voice in Olympia. So, and he's a great guy. And he's been, you know, spoken the truth on homelessness. And so I'm really hoping this holds for Kevin. Now, I think this might be, perhaps, the biggest, you know, actually, I think this is sad. I gotta say, I think this is sad. I was gonna have some highlights. This is actually very sad. Because where will we get content for our show?
I don't think we've seen
without
the last of him.
Our favorite former congressional candidate and Linwood City Council member, Josh Binda, who is losing his Nicole. Nicole, come on. This is a professional news program. Can we change that picture of him? That's not fair.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, thanks. Nicole, okay, it's not funny anymore. This is a professional news program. He's a professional. He's a politician. Right. He deserves better. Come back, get a new picture in there. Okay, Nicole, all right. You know, I give up. Josh Binda and his abs, all eight of them, losing to Bryce Owens. Looks like he's going to lose his seat there on the Linwood City Council. Man, the abs weren't enough. That's an 8-pack. Weren't enough to get him. Maybe he can now dedicate more of his time to posting shirtless pics on social media. Josh Binda, of course, the troubled young man who believed that he was entitled to break the rules, didn't have to pay fines because he didn't know how to write a check, believed he could live in a district other than the one he's supposed to serve and get away with it, all because of the pigment of his skin. Well, apparently even in Linwood, voters have had enough. And they're replacing him. I haven't seen, is this sexist? But I haven't seen Bryce Owens' bod. Maybe he's got a good bod. You know, I don't know, because that's what it's all about. I guess Josh Binda really thought the abs would get him across the finish line.
Well, you know, so he can go learn to write checks now. It's a life
skill.
He can
spend some time, yeah, learning to write checks, mm-hmm. or I'm sure he'll try to mount another bid for Congress or something like that. Yeah. So you're funny, Nicole. Good stuff. Okay, we're going to talk about some change in the business tax in Seattle that passed last night. Also get into yet another government fund that is racing toward insolvency and who's going to have to bail it out. Of course, you, the taxpayer. First, if you are thinking that you might need a new roof, maybe coming up soon, or maybe it's something you want to plan ahead for spring, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. And I keep asking, Nicole, do you get those?
I did, actually. Okay. You just went to this a little bit earlier. I would have had them.
Oh, I'll share them tomorrow. Okay, that's tomorrow. All right. Really letting me down today. That's okay. When you see that red Valentine van at your neighbor's house, you know they're getting the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and a team that always goes the extra mile. When you call Valentine, you get honesty. If your roof can be repaired, they won't try to push you into a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, you can rest assured that your new roof will have a lifetime warranty. And Valentine does so much more than just install roofs. If you need gutters cleaned or installed, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning or custom holiday lighting, that's what I was looking for a picture of.
Nicole, I see the photo, and I have photos now, and they'll be ready tomorrow, and they look fabulous.
Gosh, see, that's what I really need. And I need custom holiday lighting.
A lot of their clients live on the lake, and
wow.
I'm very jealous.
Well, that's because, you know, if you're going to show off some holiday lights, you want other people to see it, right? So schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Again, call 206 Roofing, and please tell them that you heard about them here on Undivided. All right.
I think lakefront property is required.
You do?
I do not think,
yes, that lakefront property is required in order to have nice Christmas lights.
Right.
Yes, 100%. All right. So Seattle voters decided to pass a restructuring of the business and occupation tax. And Mayor Harrell and Democrats sold this as just such a wonderful thing for business. It's not a wonderful thing for business. But Seattle voters, if there's a new tax on their ballot, for some god-awful reason, they'll always vote yes for it. So this was Seattle Proposition 2. 68% voted yes, 32% voted no. And again, this is all in how it's sold to people and whether the media is willing to be critical of how it's being sold by Democrats. So essentially what this does is, yes, for 90% of Seattle's businesses that are smaller in size, less revenue, they will see lower B&O taxes under Proposition 2 when it becomes law. But for companies that have annual revenues that exceed $5.7 million, their B&O taxes are going to go up. So they're going to bear a larger burden, a larger part of the business tax burden in the city of Seattle. And look, I love small businesses. I'm glad that small businesses are going to be able to see a little bit of B&O tax relief. But there's a couple things going on here that just really undercut this. First of all, there was just a massive B&O tax increase at the state level. So you might be giving them a little respite in the city of Seattle and decreasing their taxes a little bit, but you already screwed them at the state level. And now you're like, oh, celebrate us for giving you a little tax break in the city of Seattle. No, net, their taxes aren't going down. They're still paying more. They're paying more and more every single year. And it's ridiculous. The other thing is, if we continue on this trajectory of punishing successful businesses, we will have no more successful businesses in the city of Seattle and in Washington State. And we already see this with businesses deciding that because of the regulatory climate, because of the taxes, they are just not going to do business here. And what does that mean? What did it mean when Amazon, when you targeted them for taxation, Seattle? And because you thought, well, they have more than enough money. We're going to tax the rich people and tax Jeff Bezos and tax Amazon. Well, what did Amazon do? They said, screw you. And they started building giant skyscrapers in Bellevue and packing them with employees that they moved from Seattle. And so the trickle-down effect, I feel like I'm just a broken record. The trickle-down effect is fewer high-paying jobs when you're supposed to tell us you want good living wages, fewer high-paying jobs, fewer businesses in the city of Seattle that are paying into your coffers. Those big businesses support small businesses. Fewer employees for the big businesses means fewer customers for the small businesses. Everyone suffers up and down the food chain. And then ultimately, when those major corporations or big businesses leave the city because they say, screw you, or leave the state, then you have a big gap in your funding. And then you're back at square one, trying to figure out where do we come up with that money. And eventually, there aren't going to be any rich people here to tax. There aren't going to be any successful businesses here to tax. And it always falls on the backs of the working class and the poor. It's just so crazy. It's just basics. And they do not understand this. And so the cycle, it already happened in Seattle, by the way. When they pass the tax on high-paying jobs, they're getting far less revenue than they started with and far less revenue than they expected. Because why? People moved high-paying jobs out of the city because they could. And so then the city's like, we're in a major budget deficit. Well, guess we got to figure out another plan. It's absolutely insane. And on the theme of businesses leaving, you know, we highlighted one of their voices on Sundays with Subscribers, Heritage Distilling, which is a beloved Northwest company. These are the kind of companies born and bred here that I think are so unique to our area and that we should be just falling over ourselves to make sure that they can continue to operate here and do business. But Justin Seifel, who's the CEO of Heritage, he was on Sundays with Subscribers with us this week and said, look, at some point, you just gotta call it quits.
It's like it's a relationship. Mm-hmm. When you are in a bad relationship, sometimes you just have to let it go. And this is the final straw for us, because in business, you really have three partners. You have your customer, okay? You have the community, and the community is both the community you live and work in and you're trying to do interesting things for, but it's also your suppliers, your vendors, and the other folks who buy from you. Mm-hmm. And then you have the government. The government is your third partner, whether you like it or not. The consumer, you can't do anything about that other than try to provide a really amazing product or service. That's your obligation. You have to do it. We're successful at that. Now, we're not able to stop the headwinds that are out there economically, but you can kind of plan around that. Okay? The community has always been great. The community is not going to go anywhere. Our vendors, our suppliers, they're amazing. They're not going anywhere. But the one thing I cannot control is the third partner, which is the biggest and the most expensive and the one that's kind of over your shoulder all the time, grabbing your shoulders and looking at you. And that's the government. And property taxes are going to go up. That increase of 1 to 3% that will compound, that will impact not just people who own their property, but people who lease their property, especially you're in a triple net situation. The landlord is going to pass that property tax on to you. You pay that no matter what. That is going to have a really devastating impact on Main Street, because a lot of these small businesses, they don't own the retail spaces they're in. They've got higher labor costs coming down the pipeline. Oh, by the way, State of Washington's long-term care program is going to be bankrupt. Mm-hmm. They're not going to cut services. Oh. There's only one thing to do, which is increase the taxes or withholdings on both employees and employers. Yeah. This idea of the surtax, the head tax on companies that have payrolls over a certain amount, we were going to be subject to that. Wow. And I'll be damned if I'm going to pay an extra 5% tax on top of all the other things simply because we employ people.
Right. For the crime of being things, a job creator.
Yeah. Yeah. And so all of these things, again, they may not be in effect right now, but they have forecasted that they're coming, and they are on the pipeline. They're on the train. The train is coming. And I cannot sign 3 or 5 or 7 year leases knowing that next year or 3 years from now, the economics completely flips things upside down. And then I'm on the hook personally for these long-term leases. That's not tenable.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. Any sane business owner in his position would be doing the same thing right now. Because why would you, what has anything in the state of Washington, any, you know, Governor Bob Ferguson even, who acted like he was going to be pro-business, anti-tax, passed the largest tax increase in state history within 3 months of taking office, all of the votes, all of these results, what in the last 10 years has given anyone in his position any hope that the business climate is going to change? Nothing, literally nothing. And Heritage Distilling isn't closing down. They're just getting rid of their brick and mortar tasting rooms across the Pacific Northwest. And now they'll switch to a direct to consumer model. So you can buy them at the grocery stores, but you don't get that in-person experience, which again is such a Northwest thing. And so it's just devastating to see companies like that decide that they have to leave. And he calls it a breakup. Like eventually you have to, you work to mend and counseling and all these things. And it doesn't work because the people in Olympia aren't listening because they don't have to listen. They are all of the same political party. The ones who can make decisions without any sort of consultation with Republicans. They don't have to worry about dissent. Anything that pops into their brain, they just get to make it a law. And we have voters that are for some reason just fine with that. Just fine with it. Just fine watching all these businesses leave and not understanding, not connecting the dots, that eventually is going to lead to more taxes and a lower quality of life for the working class. It is really an infuriating sort of thing. And so, yes, I mean, I don't think that the results of an off-year election are the end-all be-all. Just 4 years ago in the city of Seattle, the last time that there was this sort of off-year election, the whole slate of moderates won. But then what happened 4 years later is, we'll go back to the commies and the socialists and people who want to grow the size of government. And in truth, is there really that big of a difference between them? Truthfully. They all want to give out free stuff. They all support the increased taxes. They all support growing the size of government. And as I've said at the theme of this show, more handouts, less freedom. And for some reason, that really appeals to voters. I can't think of anything that would appeal more to me than my freedom, than maintaining my autonomy from the government. And I don't know how we get people to think a little bit differently. We're not done yet, though, on government failures and voters continuing to support it with their ballots. So we'll talk about that coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, things aren't getting better for you either. I mean, holy smokes, you just saw Mamdani in New York in his revenge speech after he won, talking about the evil landlords and what they're going to do to them. And you think that situation is any different than it is here in Washington? I don't think so. So become a member of RHA today and have someone in your corner trying to fight back against it. Do not go it alone. It's like $260 a year. They can help you navigate this complex world of rules, regulations, and these new laws like rent control. And they'll be down in Olympia this session, banging on the doors of lawmakers, trying to get them to see reason. So RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. Okay, another result from yesterday's election that I was sort of wishy-washy on this one, but I ultimately ended up voting no on it. Unfortunately, I was overruled by most of the voters in Washington state. It is Amendment 8201, and that's the amendment that would say, yes, the state can invest our long-term care funds in things like the stock market and private equity. And, you know, I came to a no vote because, so this was a bipartisan proposal sent to voters. So there were Republicans and Democrats in Olympia that supported it. And why did they feel the need to put this forth? Well, because like so many programs the state of Washington creates, the long-term care fund was like insolvent on arrival. They knew from the moment they passed it that it would be almost immediately insolvent. They passed it anyway, of course, because they knew, oh, we'll just come back later on, tax people more, take more from their paychecks. Or in this case, they're pushing a constitutional amendment that basically says we have this fund and we want it to grow more over time. So we're going to take it out of more reliable investments where there isn't the amount of risk associated. And we're going to put it into things like private equity and the stock market, where there's a lot of risk associated with it. But Republicans said, hey, the state agency that invests funds in this way has a pretty good track record. So they supported it. But I just don't trust anyone in Olympia. And that's why I landed on no. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark told us he was voting no, like absolutely no. And I took his advice and I voted no too. But 57% of voters rather said yes. So Amendment 8201 will become law and they will start to invest our long-term care fund into the stock market and private equity. And let's hope that they don't make the same mistake that was made in California, where they lost, what, $500 million in retirement funds by investing it in private equity climate stuff. So that's concerning. But I think more concerning is that this isn't even the first fund that you pay into that's racing toward insolvency. And it just shows the incompetence of government and the fact that they just are like, yeah, let's create all these programs and give people all this quote unquote free stuff and all this socialism. And if it works or is solvent, we'll worry about that later. So this is from the Washington State Standard. Expected slide in Washington unemployment trust fund balance could trigger new tax. So this one is concerning because in this case, there's something built into our unemployment insurance fund, which employers already pay into. That so if you like lose your job, you know, you can go collect unemployment. This isn't even something that like we get a say on whether they pass a new tax or that lawmakers have to vote on whether they pass a new tax to fund it if it's insolvent. It's just going to trigger it. So again, from the state standard, Washington businesses would need to shoulder roughly $700 million in additional taxes in a few years unless the projected finances of the state's unemployment insurance fund improve. Next year, employer taxes going into Washington's unemployment trust fund are expected to total $1.7 billion, while benefit payouts rise to $2.4 billion. So obviously there's a math issue there. At the end of September, the trust fund, which only pays benefits and not administrative costs, had about $3.8 billion, totaling 7.9 months of benefits on hand. As payroll taxes lag payouts, that's projected to drop to 7.1 months by the same time next year, and then 6.3 months in 2027. So they're projecting this out and they're saying we're going to have less and less on hand, months on hand, to be able to pay out unemployment benefits. So you can again do the math. It says dropping below 7 months of benefits on September 30th of a given year triggers a state tax of up to 0.2% on businesses to bring the trust fund back up to healthy levels, which would be considered 9 months of payments on hand. So this is automatic. So they go, and if it triggers below 7 months of unemployment benefits on hand, then automatically businesses are going to be taxed an additional 0.2%, which you see that and you think, okay, well, you know, the unemployment trust fund isn't the most controversial fund that the state of Washington has. But, you know, this exact unemployment fund couldn't help but remember what happened with it this past session. What happened with it just a couple months ago? Well, Democrats in Olympia expanded it. Democrats in Olympia expanded it to include pay for striking workers. Governor signs bill making striking workers eligible for unemployment insurance. You remember that? And people said, why would you do that? Why would you give unemployment benefits to people who choose to go on strike? Why would you do that when our unemployment insurance fund is already stretched thin? it's because the unions fund the Democrats. The unions fund the Democrats. The unions wanted a gift. The unions wanted their members to have a little bit of a cushion if they decide to take to the picket line. The Washington Education Association, the most powerful union in the state, wants to be able to hold schools hostage every single year to get more pay for their teachers, who are some of the lowest performing teachers in the nation. And Democrats, despite the fact that they knew that this unemployment insurance fund was going to be stretched thin, was going to be insolvent for people who lose their job through no fault of their own, they said, yes, okay, unions, okay, WEA, we'll let you guys access the unemployment insurance fund when you choose to strike. So bad governance, cronyism, one-party rule, all of it is going to trigger even more taxes for businesses. So it always comes back to the taxpayer. And this is the mismanagement that we're talking about. And people don't see it. No, it's just another tax here and there. Well, every time there's another tax, more and more people leave. And maybe that's what they want. Maybe that's what they want at the end of the day. So they want, you know, conservatives. They want independents. They want rich people to leave so they can create some sort of communist utopia. But I don't know who they think will fund this communist utopia. If all the people who actually have money that you take to fund all these things walk out the door. It's just crazy. All right, so I talked about the theme of today's show, which is between people who want more government and people who want less government. Let's talk about a good example of that in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so let me play this Mamdani cut again from the top of the show today.
We will prove that there is no problem too large for government to solve and no concern too small for it to care about.
No problem too large for government to solve. No problem too small for it to care about. And that's where people, the government, lets us down. Because it focuses so much on these small things, right? And then it loses focus on the big things. And it stops doing the big things right. It spends money on the small things. And they might say, oh, 10,000 here, 100,000 here, 1 million here, a drop in the bucket. But all that adds up. And all of a sudden, they're coming to you with their hands out saying, oh, we need money for the big things. Because they spent the money that should go to the big things on the small things. This is a perfect example. So I got sent this by a viewer. It's about a library event in Cedro Woolley coming up tomorrow, actually, if you're looking for something to do in the evening. It's called, And It Has Pockets, The Battle for Women's Clothing Equity. Oh, yes. If you go to the Central Skagit Library tomorrow in Cedro Woolley, you can hear about the ongoing battle, apparently, for women's clothing equity. It says, how many times have you heard someone wearing women's clothing exclaim, and it has pockets? Comparisons have shown that modern garments designed for women have about half the storage space of clothing designed for men. From their invention, pockets in women's fashion have represented independence, so much so that in the 18th century, laws were enacted to strip women of their personal liberty by making the contents of their pockets the property of their husband. Okay, you get the point. There's going to be a speech given by a woman, Diane Johnston, who specializes in theatrical costume design and has spent the past 33 years creating costumes for productions large and small. And she's going to talk about how it is sexist not to have pockets in women's clothing. Great. Now, I wouldn't care about this. I would say, Diane, cool, you do you. And if the geriatrics in Cedro Woolley have nothing to do that day and they want to come to the library and hear about how women's clothing doesn't have pockets, why should I care? Well, I care because it's being put on by an organization called Humanities Washington. The organization, it's a nonprofit. It says its mission is to open minds and bridge divides by creating spaces to explore different perspectives. And that sounds on its face great. And you know what? I searched through their calendar. I found some events that I might even want to go to. There's one happening this week on UFOs. You know I love UFOs. And so I actually, in looking at the events they have scheduled throughout the state, they have a variety of things. They're not all dripping in identitarianism. There's a lot of them on race and tribal rights and stuff. But then I spotted a few. I'm like, oh, UFOs, political division, dresses without pockets. I was like, there's something for everyone. So what's my problem? My problem is that this is one of many things when you talk, we hear Mamdani talk about, it's nothing too small for the government to focus on. This is one of many of those very, very small things that's being made possible, whether you know it or not, by your generous donation of taxpayer funds. We looked at state logs, and the Arts Commission this year alone has given Humanities of Washington nearly $250,000, $205,000 this year alone, so that they can host events like the Battle for Women's Clothing Equity. I would ask every single voter in the state, why should tax money be going to that? At a time when we just passed, the governor just signed the largest tax increase in state history. At a time when the gas tax has gone up 6 cents and the cost of gasoline in our state has gone up astronomically. At a time when you even admit it's more expensive than ever for people to live here. The cost of living is out of control. And to me, the best way to help people deal with an increased cost of living is to let them keep more of their own money so they're not so damn poor at the end of every month. But for some reason, you acknowledge that it's expensive for people to live here. You acknowledge that people are struggling. And your solution to that is to take more of their money? That's going to help them struggle less? And then you spend that money not on things that will benefit them, but you spend that money, you treat it like USAID for the Democratic Party and the progressives, and you give it to organizations like Humanities Washington so they can host events around the state where some random woman talks to people at a library about clothing equity and how the fact it's sexist that women's clothing don't have enough pocket space. And don't even get me started on laser hair removal for transgender inmates, which is the thing I always go back to. So like you want us to believe that you care about the working class, Mamdani or whoever it is, or Katie Wilson in Seattle, or really Democrats at large. We're so worried about the working class and the poor. We're so worried about the cost of living. People can't afford homes, and oh my gosh, that's leading to the worst homeless crisis in the nation. And again, your solution to that is more government and taking more money from the people who can least afford to give it to you. And then people keep voting for that over and over and over and over and over again. And one day they throw up their hands and say, oh my gosh, I can't retire here. It's too expensive. I guess I gotta go. And they never, ever blame it. They never assign blame. They just accept it as a fact of life and move on. It is so crazy. What do we do about that? And they celebrate. Oh, handouts? Oh my gosh, thank you so much. And they don't realize that handout is coming at their own expense. Their own expense financially and their own expense by giving away piece by piece the freedom that they enjoy as Americans. Throws me for a loop. We'll get to some national election results coming up next. Nicole, did you say we're down on Facebook?
We are. So okay. You have to watch on YouTube.
Have to watch on YouTube, or we're fine everywhere else. There's just an issue with
YouTube
Facebook.
YouTube and X, yeah.
Facebook,
I wonder just what it cut is. Off. I don't know why.
Mystery of all mysteries. She was trying to signal something to me. So just cut off on Facebook today. Wants to really challenge me on this week that I've been sick all
I
week,
know.
Feeling better, but I am so tired today. I told Nicole, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do the show because I slept like crap last night because I just am getting over this illness. But here we are. It's going fine. It's going fine, I guess.
Powering through.
All right. So 2025 is almost coming to a close. So if you're thinking about selling your home in 2026, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Liz reached out to Wes after deciding he offered exactly what she needed. She said, I'm so glad I found Wes. It was exactly what I was looking for when I needed to sell my condo. Working with them was stress-free, no pressure. They gave recommendations on suggested improvements. I was able to pick and choose what I wanted to get done based on my budget. They coordinated everything with the contractor, including receiving and setting up new appliances. And that's what's so great about Wes. This is like full service stuff. He's also going to come in, do their listing boost concierge service, which means that he can help you manage any sort of cosmetic improvements that need to be made in order to get the most possible value out of your home. Takes it all off your plate. Communication is fantastic. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so I will talk about some of the national results. Again, I'm not trying to dismiss the fact that For Republicans, you always want to win, right? I think Republicans nationally are wanted to win. They have the governor's office in Virginia. So losing the governor's office to a Democrat sucks, but Virginia is a blue state, and New Jersey is a blue state, and New York City is a blue city, and California, as you talk about Prop 50, is a blue state. So I don't think that there's anything totally shocking about the results of yesterday. But, you know, if they foretell perhaps what's to come in the midterms, then that is something that Republicans need to be very concerned about. But there's a couple other themes in here that are obviously just disappointing. First of all, Virginia governor's race, the actual governor's race itself. I mean, Abigail Spanberger is just totally milquetoast. I mean, I watched her speak. I was like, snooze-a-thon. But Winsome Earl Sears, I don't think, was a fantastic candidate. And she lost pretty significantly. The results right now, 57% to 42%. So that is a resounding victory, considering it wasn't too long ago that a Republican captured the governor's office from a Democrat. And yeah, I mean, that's just, it's not great. So I don't think that's the results that, that is a bad result for Republicans, especially considering Virginia has Glenn Youngkin right now. So that's not great. But I think the more shocking thing, of course, is the attorney general's race. It's just wild. You got this guy who wants to murder or shoot his political enemies in the head and have their kids watch him die and have their kids die, which should be disqualifying, as I've said many times, for any politician, any political candidate on either side of the aisle, but not for Jay Jones. He is going to win that race, 52% of the vote, closer than the governor's race. So you see in there that there were people who were aware probably of those messages, didn't vote party line, decided Democrat for governor, the Republican incumbent, but it just wasn't enough. And that is just so crazy to me. So I just really don't think there's anything off limits. I mean, I think you'd have to murder someone as a political candidate in order to lose. And maybe not even then. Maybe not even then. Political party really, for a growing number of Americans, is the only thing that matters. That's it. Bodies, numbers, all of that. Vote blue, vote red, no matter who, it doesn't matter. And that's a scary place to be. I will say I was a little surprised by the results in the New Jersey governor's race, just because I think Jack Cittarelli was a great candidate. Very likable, very authentic. And Mighty Sherrill is just, again, milquetoast. I don't know where they're getting these, like, milquetoast women who, is that mean? Is it, am I biased against female candidates? But just very uninteresting and uninspiring. But they won. What?
All right. Oh, nothing. I forgot to switch colors on that.
That's all right. But they won. And so I guess good for them. Maybe that's something that I think they both have military service and sort of backgrounds in service. And so maybe that's a good sort of indicator for Democrats if they're concerned about having female candidates, given the way the Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris things went, that maybe they sort of lean toward people who are more like Mikey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger. I don't know.
He's a good looking dude, too.
He is a good looking dude. And I'm sorry, the visual optics are important in politics, whether you're a man or a woman. They just are. And Jay Inslee seems to really like that Mikey Sherrill won. He tweeted, Republicans spent millions attacking Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey on electricity costs and got clobbered. People don't like Trump and his cult denying folks access to cheap and clean energy. This ends any calls for a retreat on clean energy. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And first of all, clean energy, as we've seen, does not make it cheaper. If it's just the stupidest thing. I don't know why we're even listening to Jay Inslee anymore.
No
and the fact
way.
That he likes no Mikey Sherrill tells me absolutely everything that we need to know. Yeah, and I think with the, and this is an interesting question. I actually think it's been a poll question we've done before with the Jack, how is Cittarelli? I have a hard time saying his name. He ran for governor the last cycle and he lost, but by a much more narrow margin than this time around. I tend to think people just don't like that. I really tend to think, like Chad Magandon's in the fifth. He's run several times since leaving his seat and he's lost. And I just think sometimes voters are like, I already told you once or twice, I'm just not interested. Now there's been exceptions like President Trump. He lost in 2020, came back and won in 2024. So there's been exceptions, but some people, and you know them, they're like the mainstays on the ballot. They run for every freaking office every time and they never win. And again, there are some exceptions to that. But like how many times, Nicole, does a person have to lose for you to like totally lose interest in them?
Well, I mean, it also just has to do with where they're running. I just think,
yeah,
like, you know, the more blue wins, the more red leaves, and you're never going to win as a red.
Well, right. So, and here's the thing.
I don't know how we get past that.
And I'll say this about our state races and the two races that we were talking about earlier in the 5th and the 26th with Michelle Caldier, a great candidate, great politician, losing to an unknown. You know what? Republicans run as Democrats. Am I going to get shit for saying that? Yeah, probably. In Washington state, I think Republicans need to start running as Democrats. Because, hear me out. I understand it's contrary to whatever. But at this point, things are so broken, I genuinely don't care. If you have to sacrifice and pretend to be a Democrat for a little bit, is this a horrible thing for me to say? And then come in and govern like a Republican, that's fine. Be more fiscally conservative or whatever it is. And maybe you only get 2 years out of it. Maybe they kick, you know, maybe you don't get reelected because you misled people on who you are. I don't even care anymore. Because, like, there's so much at stake.
Independent.
No, just call yourself a Democrat.
Or do that.
Just, I don't even, because there's such a segment, I'm going to get so much shit for saying this. There's this segment of voters mm-hmm. who literally are just going to circle the D.
Yeah.
And then there's a segment, if it's D on D, they're just going to pick one. Because they don't know and they're not going to bother doing the research. So you'll get lucky a couple times. I bet you that if Michelle and Chad had just run as D's, fake D's, don't even care, even if they had a long track record of being Republicans, they'd probably be heading toward the state Senate. And we'd be in a much better situation as a state. I just don't know. I don't know what else to do. Because again, you have to get through these people who are just filling in a circle. And they genuinely don't know who the candidate is. They don't know anything about them except there's a D and I'm just going to do it. And I bet they'd like some of the policies that these people would push. They just have to get over the R. Is that a horrible thing for me to say? Just pretend you're Democrats.
How it affects their lives? I mean, they don't pay attention. These people are not paying attention.
No, they're not. And I don't want to call them dumb. I think there are some people who are voting for, and I'll move on to the next story, but I think there are some people who are voting for the person they want. Like they want, oh my gosh, yes, I want a hard D, but I just don't think that that's the majority. Try it. I don't even care. I'm sure the Republican Party's like, Brandy, don't say that. Yep, I said it. Run as a Democrat. I, for one, am very happy. I've always maintained that I'm an independent. I've never registered with a political party. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that if you have deeply held beliefs, but there's just this element of, you know, wanting to kind of stay clear of a label in case your mind changes, in case something, I mean, look how much my political beliefs have shifted in recent years. I mean, and I think that shows that, like, you know, I have more independent streak in me. And if presented with new information, I'll change my mind. And now I don't have to be married to a party label because I've never had a party label. But look, hell, run Republicans as Democrats. Once they get to Olympia, put them in the Republican caucus. They're not going to get thrown out of office. Let them just stay there for 2 years, 4 years, block whatever bad bills they can block. In the meantime, I honestly think it's a good idea. Curious what you guys think. All right, Kamala Harris heckled in Seattle. Oh, poor Kamala. First of all, the book tour, who's going to this? It's got to be excruciating, but I guess probably had a big crowd in Seattle. So she had a stop at her book tour at Benaroya Hall in Seattle. And there was a planned anti-Israel protest outside, which isn't a surprise because, you know, this is what the far left does. They try to beat the rest of the Democratic Party into submission. And I think that's happening more and more every single day. And they had a quote on here from, they called her Killer Kamala, Rally for Palestine, Killer Kamala out of Seattle. And they had a quote from Kamala saying, let me be very clear. I'm unequivocal in Israel's right to defend itself. And that's not going to change. So they think that's a bad thing. They think that a quote is bad, that she said Israel has a right to defend itself. So they literally are saying Israel shouldn't be able to defend itself. Okay, so terrorists should just be able to come in and murder and rape people and Israel shouldn't be able to defend itself. Got it. Our friend Ari Hoffman went in and there was a little bit of a disruption during the book event. Yeah, so that happened multiple times by pro-Hamas, anti-Israel activists. And again, just because that one statement that she says Israel has a right to defend itself. In this case, I'm going to defend Kamala. I'm going to defend Kamala from the crazy unhinged activists that her own party actually kowtows to. And now we have a mayor in New York City who said that he'd arrest Benjamin Netanyahu if he ever if he steps foot in New York City. Like, yeah, this is going to be a wild ride for sure. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll, comments and all that good stuff coming up next. First, with talk of an AI bubble, how concerned are you about the risk that your retirement portfolio is exposed to? We'll talk to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital about it. You can do that in a few ways. First of all, he's having their final webinar of the year. It's their preview live webinar happening November 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. They're going to talk about the impact AI is having on the market, do a preview for 2026, talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So in a nutshell, go to the webinar. It's going to be free. And Zach will talk about the AI bubble, how they manage the risk of that situation, whether, you know, it bursts and how you can protect your retirement. And then he'll talk about, you know, what's coming up. So you can join that. Also, while you're there at knowyourriskpodcast.com, signing up for the webinar, schedule your free Know Your Risk Portfolio review, where you can get a one-on-one with Bulwark to actually look at your specific situation, and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll. There was a lot of hand-wringing after the election. And I guess I just did a lot of hand-wringing for the last 57 minutes. But again, I don't know that this is like specifically, oh my God, Republicans are burning down. It's just not that big of a deal, in my opinion. So I asked you guys, do you believe last night's results are a referendum on Trump? And look, like the party in power always tends to do worse in some of the off-year midterm elections. Nicole, yay or nay? Ooh, people pretty split here. Split.
I'm going to say no. I actually think it's just it's the country itself. I think everybody is very checked out of voting. I mean, the voter turnouts were really low. I think that people are just not engaged and paying attention to what really affects them. I don't think they're really checked into how the decisions made by these people in power are affecting their lives. Yeah. They associate it with things that are not meaningful. Yeah. And, you know, oh, that happens everywhere. I had somebody say that to me, like, yeah, oh, aren't you tired of this, this, and this? And they're like, oh, yeah, but that's everywhere. No, that's everywhere here because mm-hmm. of these things, right? And people are just detached.
Yeah, I think the people who come out in off-year elections and like vote in primaries and stuff, these are the people who are tried and true. Like they absolutely, and you tend to be, I think, more eager to vote when you're upset with the direction of things than if you're like, hey, things are going fine. So in that sense, maybe it is like people who are happy with what Trump's,
people
who are happy with what Trump is doing. They're like, oh, I don't feel so strongly. There's so much winning. And it's like, oh, winning can stop really quickly if I don't get mm-hmm. involved. You guys are pretty split. 47% yes, 53% no. So more of you say no, but it is very close. Newfie lover. Oh, like a Newfoundland? Is that what that is? Oh, there's a picture of a dog in your profile. That's really nice on Patreon. I love that. More people should have pictures of dogs as their profile pics on Patreon. Reading on social media all the celebration for elected socialists is exceedingly eye-opening to how voters are just little lemmings. Right, and there are mainstream Democrats who were on social media last night celebrating, oh my gosh, historic, Mamdani. It's like, oh, so you are the party of socialists now. You're not even trying to hide it. PV and Wah, I feel some of the vote was pure TDS. Oh, for sure. Can't get rid of the TDS. For others, the vote seems the result of socialist indoctrination that took place while we were all busy working and trusting others to educate our kids. We had no idea what lies were being fed our kids for the last three generations. Now young voters will have to see for themselves why people flee the socialist communist system in other countries. I was also very surprised to see the numbers for women under the age of 30, mm-hmm. how hard they are turning for Democrats and for socialists is terrifying. And to be fair, I had my awakening around the age of 33, 34, 35 in that area. So maybe they just need a few years into adulthood to mm-hmm. really understand how bad some of these policies are for them.
Do you think that's because, even 9/11, which is the closest thing that we've come to as, war on
trauma,
our own,
right.
on our own land.
Yeah.
Those people are just now becoming adults. And I mean, that like those people that are adults now are have never experienced anything close to, you know, hardship really yeah. in this country. And so I think that, you know, it's going to take something really, really bad to get people to realize that we have it good here.
Yeah.
And
how bad is it? I mean, what would that be?
You know? I don't want to think about that, but I think that's where we are right now is that we've got these young adults that have never experienced anything hard. I mean, not even the 9/11 is in their
But even memory. If 9/11 happened today, I feel like the same segment that celebrates like Hamas, pro-Palestine, I feel like they would somehow celebrate 9/11 if it happened today.
Probably. They're that crazy.
I mean, it's really unhinged, a level that it just, and social media, I think, has a lot to do with that. You see all these things and you get in this groupthink and you're indoctrinated in social media. And then you got crazy teachers. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that 9/11 would be a unifying thing today as it was when it happened.
But they don't have any reference to how bad socialism can be, how bad communism is, how what war is like.
I know.
I mean, they have no frame of reference. And so I don't think they have that.
Education in part to blame. All right, a few more viewer comments on the subscriber poll. Christopher Harvey, not a referendum on Trump because that requires or at least implies a rational and reasoned analysis of Trump's policies and performance. It was mostly a referendum on our education system showing its dismal failure, as we were just discussing, in teaching about history, economics, politics, and reality. Yeah, and you don't have to go back too far to see the woes of socialism and communism. And so that's the troubling thing. It's like, we don't have to keep recreating this or trying the experiment over and over. It always fails every time. Terry Lee on Locals, it's pretty clear that most people in my area of unincorporated King County, Issaquah, Sammamish, Bellevue, want boys to play in girls' sports. Little parental rights at school, more taxes, less business, and less freedom. So very ignorant. That's what they're voting for. And they might say, well, I don't support those things. Well, why are you voting for people who will do that?
Because they don't like Trump.
Right. Because most people, if you ask them that, Terry, if you said, hey, do you support less parental rights at school? Or if you say, do you support more taxes or less business and less freedom? They'd say, of course not. Like, okay, well, you voted for somebody who will bring all those things. And they can't connect it. And it's because the TDS is just so high. Just crazy. All right, let's get to comments from others on the show. Other topics on some of the gloomy election results. Jack Hartstock says, small victory for us here in Linwood that corrupt Josh Binda got wiped out last night. Yes, Nicole, thank you for those great shirtless pictures of him.
Like I said, I don't know that he's gone. He likes the attention
way
too much.
Oh, he does. Loves the attention.
I'm just very curious where he'll turn up next.
What is the Linwood Times going to do with his time?
I mean, if he's living in Everett, I bet you he's on the ballot pretty soon.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And I'm sure it's racism. He lost because of racism.
Of course.
If he hasn't said that already, it's coming. Randy Nguyen, baffling. Once you give up your freedom, it's very hard to get it back. I agree. 10th generation American says, yeah, Mom Donnie just looks like a fox in the hen house. Can't be trusted. Not one bit.
Oh, his smile turned evil overnight.
It was like, he's like, I hate everyone.
It's like the Grinch when the Grinch goes like that. I feel like that's what happened last night. As soon as he got on stage, it was like, that evil Grinch smile.
It's awful. Why on Patreon? I hate when they say free in government. Nothing's free. It's paid for by tax and probably costs so much more than if you figured out a way to get it yourself. Yeah, 100%. On the Seattle voters passing business tax increases, Paul... Cutting taxes is how you lift people out of poverty. Raising taxes makes everyone poor. Cut taxes, businesses grow, expand and hire, more tax revenue comes in for social programs. Yeah,
Well, that's very common sense of you.
Gee, Paul, why can't we just get other people to understand this simple concept? On the unemployment funds running low, Adam from Allen, politicians don't invest. They divvy out money to their cronies via deception. 100%. Lil Ms. J, the road to hell is paved by good intentions. I have never forgotten that simple phrase. Oh, yeah, they think they're doing something righteous and wonderful, and they're not. On the Battle for Clothing Equity meeting, let me know if you guys head to that at the library and just know that this organization is funded by taxpayers. Not the real Batman. Oh, I want to go ask her. Would you say the oppression of women during the Victorian era has led this pocket revolution? Go ask her that. Egamorph, wow, finally someone getting down and dirty with the real dilemma of our century. And by the way, I hate pockets and dresses. It always makes it
I
don't want any pockets. I don't want to put things in my dress.
I mean, I love the idea of it, but I don't like the look of it.
We have purses. I don't need pockets. And you know what? I like when my husband carries my shit. I even make him carry my purse. If I got something, I don't want it sticking out of my cute outfit and clothes. I just hand it to him to carry. I say less pockets in women's clothing.
Cargo pants are an option we choose not to utilize.
No, because I don't like people of the same sex. I don't wear cargo pants. I love the lesbians, but it is kind of a lesbian cargo pants and Subarus, okay? Necro two shoes. Democrats love to put their hands in all the pockets they possibly... That's why they're advocating for closing more pockets. More places to carry money that Democrats and drug addicts on Third Avenue can pickpocket. On the national election results, the last Robespierre. Whenever I say your name, when we read a comment from you, people say I'm saying it wrong, so tell me how I should say it. Brandy, you're used to the nutball ladies that run for office in Washington. That's why you find these women boring. I guess, but there's other boring, like Kim Schreier. That's boring. But here's the thing. People are all like, oh, now this is the model for Democrats when they run women, is to find women like these women who won in Virginia and New Jersey. Let me just be clear, and please bookmark this. Democrats will not allow a woman to be the Democratic presidential nominee in 2028. They will not allow it. If AOC runs, they will do to AOC what they've done to Bernie Sanders. They will never allow in 2028 to be a woman, which makes it more likely it's going to end up being someone like Gavin Newsom. And it's because they're not going to risk it again. They're not going to risk it again. They lost with Hillary Clinton. They lost with Kamala Harris. In the middle, they won against the same candidate with Joe Biden. They will not allow a woman to run. I mean, they can run, but they're not going to allow them to get the nomination. They will do whatever backdoor scheming, wheeling and dealing has to be done. Mark my words.
Is it like Marjorie Taylor Greene? Is that more your style?
For what?
For like a more interesting woman. I mean, who's the more interesting woman in politics to you?
More interesting, you know, I like
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton was on paper 100% qualified.
Annalisa.
Yeah, 100% qualified. Yeah, I'm talking more about the way that they present themselves in public, like they're speaking.
Well, they have some sort of
their body language, everything.
They're
very
willing
milquetoast
to take a stance on something. I feel like both of those were party line. This is what I'm supposed to say.
Blah, blah,
this
blah.
Is what I'm told to say.
Wishy-washy on trans rights and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like AOC. AOC is someone who's more interesting. I don't agree with her on anything, but she actually has conviction. Yeah. You know, and she's willing to say, you know, and she has some sort of personality. So that's what I'm talking about with milquetoast. It's just like, take them or leave them. Not memorable. You go walk into a room. It's not the person that you'd... That's sort of the theme.
Boring.
But like even Kamala Harris, she was crazy. But you remembered her for that reason. So yeah, it's the milquetoast thing. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like us. We're charming, funny.
Yeah.
Very memorable, right?
Memorable.
You'd never call us milquetoast. Or would you? I don't know. What was I doing? Okay, we're going to get to our closing sanity check. But first, I have been talking daily about First Mark Insurance. I am a member of the First Mark family. Our business is insured through First Mark. It's not because we get some sort of special service. No, it's because before we signed on with them as advertisers, I was like, well, let me take the First Mark challenge. My friend Dory was talking about it for years, and I'll see if this is really the exceptional service that he said it was. And it was. It was like, oh my God, why have I not been doing this for my insurance needs my entire life? Shame on me. And shame on you if you haven't taken the First Mark challenge yet, because it just saves you so much time and energy and potentially money. We hear from undivided viewers and listeners who say, Brandy, I took the First Mark challenge. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year, and I have better insurance than I had before. What did I wait for? I know, right? That is the most common thing people say. Why did I wait so long to take the First Mark challenge? FirstMarkInsurance.com. And by the way, I should add, you don't need to wait until your current insurance is up. I did this. I switched over to First Mark halfway through our policy, and you get a refund on the policy, and then you start with a new policy moving forward. So you don't have to wait for some sort of timing thing. You can take the First Mark challenge at any time. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interests in mind. All right. So let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Wow, I'm really going to make it through the show today without coughing and hacking. I feel better. Besides not sleeping last night, I feel better.
Well, you're drugged up.
I'm not drugged up.
Oh, I thought you took some like Advil, sinus or something like that.
No, just Advil. Is that being drugged up?
Well, I mean, it helps, but...
Just Advil and cocaine.
Oh, that's
what are you talking about? I don't take any drugs. What are you talking about? Seriously. All right. Now somebody's going to cut that. And I was going to
raise. Oh, jeez.
I'm not on cocaine. Okay. I'm not. Governor Ron DeSantis talking about why blue states are staying blue and in some cases getting more blue.
A leftist politician gets in, whether it's destroying a state like California, Illinois, New York, whether it's a city like New York City or Chicago. And the people that it tends to drive off are the center-right voters. And so when they leave, the resulting electorate is actually more liberal. That's how you go from Lori Lightfoot to Brandon Johnson in Chicago, which is digging the hole deeper. That's why you've gone from 8 years of de Blasio, now leapfrogging here four, to have Mandani, who's even going to be worse. And what we found in Florida is, first of all, we're not asking for anyone to move. I mean, people have talked about putting a tariff on people moving in at this point because so many have done so. And I know a lot of people in Florida would think that that would be necessary. But here's just the truth. You look at all 49 other states since I've been governor, look at who's migrated to Florida. All 49 more Republicans have moved to Florida than Democrats. Vermont, New York, Illinois, you name it. And the result of that is not just migration, because we've had a lot of people shift within Florida. But when I got elected, we had 300,000 more registered Democrats in Florida. Today, we have 1.4 million more Republicans.
And I imagine that number is going to get even bigger. And maybe that's the way of things. Maybe we allow the socialists to have their hellhole in New York City and people move to more sane areas. And you got bluer states get bluer, redder states get redder, and our country gets more divided. And we just can't live amongst each other anymore, I guess. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. People are telling me in the com brand is getting moody. What's with my voice? When my voice gets higher and my Minnesota accent kicks in, then I'm moody.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, much better showing for me today than yesterday. Feel better. Making it through the week, and then Nicole will be sick next week because
probably
of me, so we'll see how that goes. All right, remember to sign up to support our show. If you've been watching at any point for 4 years and you haven't thought, well, wow, this is worth $5 a month, then God, I just guess we suck. But if you'd like to contribute to our show, it's $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, click on the banner that says support the show, and we would love to have your support so we can continue to grow, continue to spread our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback. Toodaloo. See you tomorrow, same time.